Good evening, Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you of the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They have to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Jerry Guidetti, who is trained as a genetic engineer in genetic science, and she was certainly working on her doctorate in genetic science when she had she had to interrupt that, and she actually monitors what's happening in the genetic field for Radio Liberty and keeps us abreast of the things that are happening. Now, most people don't understand that back in the early 1950s, the government signed contracts with over 150 of our major universities to hire some of our best genetic scientists to find out how to create new diseases, how to design new forms of life, whether it be microbes or whether it be plants and things of that sort. And we've been working at this for well over 50 years. And it's really amazing what they've been able to do. Now, they can take genes from a fish and put them into a plant. They can take cancer genes and transplant them, or leukemia genes, and plant them into the foods we eat. But, of course, it's always being done. It usually is a carrier for some other item that we want to introduce, say, into our corn. Now, of course, we can put things into corn so that they will kill caterpillars. So the caterpillars can't kill the corn, and so the corn ears come out. They just look beautiful. But the only problem is, what does that product that they put into the corn that kills the caterpillars do to you and I? Well, they've done a few limited scientific studies, which, of course, until recently have never been released. And these are on a very, very small number of rats. And after these limited studies with really some very frightening results, this has been unleashed upon the American people. Well, right now we're going to be talking with Jerry Guidetti about some of the things that are happening in the genetic field. Jerry, thank you so very much for being with us.
It's always a pleasure, Dr. Stan. You're absolutely correct. So many things are happening, and they're happening so quickly we could hardly keep up with them. And I would have to say that most of the scientists working in those fields could hardly keep up with them. When I began my doctorate, actually, I was really fighting doing it because it requires such a degree of specialization that you are focused on maybe one enzyme or one enzyme's contribution to one disease. One gene is your sole project to isolate a gene that is contributing to a disease or so on. Unfortunately, it requires that degree of focus, and I tell you that because folks should know that it's difficult even for scientists to keep the big, broad forest for the trees perspective. And sometimes they don't recognize the contributions that they are making to the bigger picture. And this has happened with USDA scientists, for example, who have discovered, unfortunately, at conference tables that some of the things they were working on were contributing to things that were potentially not going to help the human race, but actually harm it. And unfortunately today, we are faced with genetic changes occurring at such rapid fire pace that we literally are letting the genie out of the bottle. Tough to put it back in, if possible at all.
Well, I think sometimes we've forgotten that between man's plan and time and God's plan and eternity, there's an infinite quality of difference. And once the toothpaste is out of the tube, why, it's pretty hard to get him back in again. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, when you're dealing with some very wicked people who have a different agenda, what have we unleashed on the earth? We'll be back with Jerry here in just a moment. Well, Jerry, the question is, what have we unleashed on the earth? You know, of course, a lot of people will say, oh, well, you know, this is all scientific. People who object to genetic engineering, why they're from the Flat Earth Society, they believe in UFOs and black helicopters, and they are, of course, certainly relegated to the lunatic fringe. But you, as a genetic engineer, you have a pretty good grasp of what's going on. So what have we unleashed?
Well, what we've done basically is we've set up this assurance, as far as I'm concerned, that we are not going to be able to evaluate the results of the genetic changes that we are making willy-nilly all over the world in our plants and in animals. We are also dealing with microbes, and you kind of alluded to that. We are dealing with microbes that we had begun to, at least our government tells us, we were not going to be involved in it anymore, creating these novel microbes that had the ability to annihilate the entire human race. And yet again, here we are starting up again in Frederick, Maryland. We're starting to do these kinds of research again, largely because they say we have to figure out what they're going to create against us in order to beat them to the punch, in order to know what they're going to throw at us so that we can be prepared for it. Well, this was just in newspapers just a couple of weeks ago, and I shudder to think about it. We are also building another high-security bio lab in the Midwest, the upper Midwest, because we want to kind of spread these things around so that they're not all in one place, making one easy target. We have the CDC, for example, working right now on creating every possible combination of the avian influenza virus in order to determine what combination is going to be the one that's going to be most lethal for this potential pandemic that is coming our way, perhaps, Dr. Stan, in the next 3 months. And I would like to talk to you about some of those genetic changes that have occurred just this week, have been recognized just this week.
All right. Well, that's you just go ahead and tell us.
Okay. Well, just this week in a province in China, by a lake, and I don't know Chinese, so I'm going to guess that the Q is Qinghai, Qinghai Lake in China, where there has been the death of thousands of bar-headed geese. And additionally, the cormorants and other birds are dying as well. And they suspected that the H5N1 virus, the avian influenza virus, that has been spreading throughout 9 countries in Southeast Asia, had indeed invaded Qinghai Lake. As it turns out, this H5N1...
You hold that thought here, because we're going to bring our other stations right back on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Jerry Guidetti, and she's pointing out that in one of the provinces in China where there's a great lake, why tens of thousands of the geese have died purportedly from this H5N1 virus, which, of course, apparently is a very lethal virus that they find in certain associated with certain types of avian influenza. And this is in 9 different nations over in the Far East. And certainly, at last count, I think there have been something like 56 people had died on one or two occasions. Why, it was spread person to person. What you fear is that you'll get a lethal form of disease that can be spread person to person, and of course that's what happened in 1918. It is interesting, however, that with the Spanish, so-called Spanish flu that began in 1918, it seemed more to originate with American soldiers who were being vaccinated, and who were vaccinated before they were sent overseas. They became deathly ill, and instead of keeping them off the boats, they put them onto the boats in close association, and then of course the influenza spread widely throughout our troops. And of course, as you know, that about 20 million people died, we're told. Now, of course, they're telling us 50 million people, but up until about a year ago, everybody admitted it was 20 million. Now the figure has suddenly grown to 50 million, almost as if they're trying to scare us to death. But maybe there is something to really fear. So pick up the story there, Jerry.
Sure. I am convinced, Dr. Stan, that this is real. It's very real. There are scientists now beginning to say that this might be enhanced by biotourism. We don't know that for sure, because these things do happen on their own. The last century, we had three pandemics, beginning in 1918, and then we had two others that were not as severe as the one in 1918. And every single century has several pandemics that greatly reduce human population on the earth at that time. And what we're looking at here is a particular virus combination, a particular series of mutations in these avian influenza viruses that make it possible for them to infect human beings. And all it takes is one or two more mutations, most scientists believe, for it to become highly efficient at spreading from human to human. Right now, it's bird to human, and human to human only in closely associated clusters. For example, a cluster of people that are tending a dying child. It tends to kill the young and the middle-aged, and you'll have a mother cradling her daughter, and the mother dies, and the aunt cradling the mother, and the aunt dies, and so on. So the virus is acquiring these mutations that make it possible to go now from person to person, and that is in a pandemic. That is a level 4 or stage 4 in the pandemic. The next stage is that it's going to be larger clusters of people, more efficiently transmitted, and so on. Now, with all of that as background, what has happened in this past week is that King High Lake, they have recognized now, they have isolated enough of the viruses that are killing off these birds to determine that this is H5N1. This is the hemagglutinin, the number 5 hemagglutinin, and the neuraminidase, number 1. That is the particular combination of genes. But in addition to that, they have a mutation called the LYS627 mutation in the PB2 gene. What is important there that we know is that in that little amino acid lysine, in that mutation, with this particular mutation, it makes this virus particularly virulent, and we now know that it kills mice in only 4 days. That is an extraordinary thing, because it says that this mutation is going to make it possible for it to move quickly through mammals. Now, all of the H5N1s in King High Lake have that. Now, why is that significant? Well, two things. First, they think the source of that virus was a single introduction from South China. Now, that begs the question, how did that single introduction get made? Was it by man or was it by bird? The other important thing is that King High Lake happens to be at the intersection of two major flyways in Asia, and those flyways extend from Alaska in North America to Eastern Europe. And these animals begin to migrate in September, as in a month and a half from now. And right now, scientists are shuddering at the thought that this is it. These guys are going to spread this to India, to North America, to Eastern Europe, and so on, because they actually migrate up to 1,000 miles away.
But of course, will this actually jump, in any degree from animals to humans, and then from human to human? That is the question.
Well,
has it reached that point yet?
Right, right. What we are at now is that we've got enough mutations in the Thailand and the Vietnam forms of H5N1. To make it from person to person. But the fact is that the King High isolates, which are in a natural refuge area with no human contact, the fact that they had this mutation, the LYS627 mutation in the PB2 gene, tells us that it's going to be more efficient at killing mammals. And so the question is it going to begin to kill mammals in the area of the lakes and all of these migratory passages, for example, when it gets to Alaska and so on? So it's looking more likely, as a matter of fact, you have normally very staid, very measured, very objective scientists asking the question, where are we going to get enough coffins with a 2.5-week supply? They ask questions like, how are you going to ensure the food supply for 18 months to 3 years, because the pandemic will come in 2 to 3 waves, most likely 3 waves, and it will stretch out over 18 months to 3 years, just like the 1918 one did. So when you have normally staid and conservative scientists who aren't into alarming anyone out there trying to individually spread the alarm, and the World Health Organization trying to spread the alarm, telling whole nations that they have got to make emergency plans now to handle this potential pandemic, which may occur 3 months from now in the first wave, or next year, or 2 years from now, but it is a sure thing, it's an inevitable thing, is what they all feel. And I have to tell you, looking at the genetics and looking at the occurrences, the fact that the virus in many ways has become weaker and is now only killing 50% of its victims.
You're talking about the birds now.
No, I'm talking the humans.
Oh, okay, of the humans, okay.
50% of humans versus the original 71 to 72%. It's getting weaker in Vietnam and Thailand. That is a bad sign, not a good sign. It would seem to be a good sign, but it isn't. What it means is some people get very, very, very ill with it enough to be able to interact with other people yet. Ebola, for example, is so deadly and so effective, yet it doesn't turn into a pandemic because it is so effective. It kills virtually 100% of its victims. None of them get to walk around and spread it. Well, in the case of a virus that is only, and I use that, you know, loosely, a virus that kills only 50% of its victims, those victims are being tended to by loved ones, especially in these villages in the poorest of these countries, and these folks are able to travel from village to village, and they are able to take care of one another and get on planes and get on buses and so on, and they therefore guarantee that the virus is going to make it to other places, that it's going to spread. And what we have right now is the classic situation for the evolution of a pandemic.
Well,
now,
it's very interesting that apparently, you know, in the past, why there were two medicines that would actually treat this. One was amantadine, the other was Tamiflu.
Yes.
But they've been using amantadine in violation of all public health. They've been using it on their chickens there,
right,
so the chickens wouldn't get it. And now, apparently, the disease, as it's in their chickens, is amantadine resistant. So now, of course, one of the two medications we had that could be used for mass dosing of human beings is no longer effective. Have you run into that?
Yes, I certainly have. And we have now several varieties. We have an amantadine sensitive strain. We have an amantadine resistant strain. We even, God forbid, have a Tamiflu resistant strain.
Now, Tamiflu is the other, for our listeners out there, Tamiflu is the other antibiotic which is specific for viruses, and the first time we've really had anything for viruses, but these two apparently do have an impact on the influenza virus. So go ahead, Jerry.
That's correct. They have an impact on influenza virus, and Tamiflu is kind of the one that everybody's hoping for. Now, it's manufactured by one company, Roche Laboratories, and the United Kingdom, Australia, New Zealand, many European countries saw the writing on the wall quite a while ago, and they began buying enough for 25% of their population. When this thing hits, they expect it to affect conservatively 25% of the global population. It's probably more like 33%. most scientists are saying, because we shouldn't look at the most conservative numbers. So,
I think it's so interesting, though, that here in the United States, the richest country in the world, we've only got 2.6 million doses
right.
of it for 300 million people. So you wonder who's going to get that 2.6 million.
Why
are we actually stockpiling a lot of things for a lot of things that are really not a problem? Why are we wasting money on so many things and yet not preparing for the potential for a massive flu pandemic? And that's a real good question. It almost appears with other countries preparing, you know, to protect their people, their population.
Mm-hmm.
There's an organized, orchestrated effort here in the United States, specifically not to protect our population.
And it's very, very sad. I think that is the greatest conundrum in this whole thing. And we're sending how much? $1.3 billion a day. We're doing the war effort in the Middle East. And we cannot provide enough to handle even 25% of our population, but only 2%.
Well, I think we really have to ask serious questions. But actually, 2.6 million doses for 300 million people, that's
only one.
That's even less than 1%. So
right.
Is there an agenda? Are our people in Washington, D.C. foolish, or do they really have a plan? Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Jerry Guidetti, talking about the influenza, the coming flu influenza epidemic or pandemic. And I will tell you, as I read the papers, and I read a number of them every day, you will find, whether it be newspapers or magazines or certainly every type of publication, they are focusing our attention on the danger of this influenza epidemic almost as if it is a certainty. And, of course, Jerry and I have talked about the lead article in the July-August issue of Foreign Affairs magazine, which is published by our invisible government, the Council on Foreign Relations. And in that issue, the three lead articles were all about the coming influenza pandemic. I mean, it wasn't, will it come? Could it come? But it is coming, and not a matter of if, but when. So, obviously, they are focusing our attention on it, and I think that's for a very, very good reason. Mm-hmm. So, go ahead. Pick up the story there, Jerry.
So, you know, that's what troubles me most. They're focusing attention on it. It's becoming part of the daily newspapers. Of course, the stories are often erroneous, and I can go on for a half an hour about that problem. But at any rate, they are allowing this information to get out, and yet, what are they trying to tell us with respect to not providing enough Tamiflu to handle the situation? They're doing experiments on viruses to try to figure out how they're going to manufacture vaccines fast enough if this thing hits. They're doing this at CDC, for example, and they're doing very dangerous experiments. They are literally mixing and matching all of the different hemagglutinins and neuraminidases, the H5N1s. Those are responsible for the hemagglutinin is to allow the virus to get into the cell, the neuraminidase to allow the finished viruses, the copies, to break out of the cell and invade the whole system. Well, they're trying all different combinations, and they're going to do live animal studies. They're going to inject them with all of these combinations. And this is ongoing right now. It's a level 4 biolab security situation down there, and they're under tight security and so on, but they are literally putting together these combinations to find out what is the most likely one that is going to affect us and then try to make vaccines against it. Well, this is what's going on with the research. Unfortunately, my comment would be day late, dollar short. Better to be doing the research than not doing it at all. But what we should be putting our money to immediately is getting enough Tamiflu for at least 25% to 33% of the U.S. population to hope that we're going to have a chance of saving the people who do get infected and perhaps get through this pandemic with not a half a billion deaths, but rather no more than our normal deaths per year, which average around 36,000 to a maximum of 50,000 people a year die of influenza. Well, you're looking at millions dying here in the United States if this thing hits and we don't have Tamiflu. So what is the purpose of them allowing this in the press? And, you know, this is quite a controlled press. Why would they allow it and then not provide for the solution? What are people going to do?
Right.
The only hope you have is to remain isolated and not have any human interaction, no mail, no anything, if you're going to survive if this thing hits and we don't have Tamiflu.
Either that or, of course, they are going to tell everybody you have to take this wonderful vaccine. It's perfectly safe. We can promise you there's absolutely nothing to worry about it. You can pretend on it. You can depend on us because we're from the government and we're here to help you.
And we have no idea what that's going to be. It is strictly experimental. For example, internationally, the international health community does not like to test vaccines on humans.
Hold that thought right there.
Yes.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Jerry Guidetti, and we're talking about the fact that if you read the papers, and you read a number of papers as I do, they're intentionally in an orchestrated and planned manner, focusing our attention on the danger of a influenza pandemic. And it's not seems to be a matter of if it's going to occur, but it's when it's going to occur. It's just a matter of time. So they're creating this impression in our mind. Now, I have no doubt that there is a danger. There's no question at all in my mind that they certainly we are dealing with a very, very lethal form of influenza, but the government has actually gone up and dug up samples of the Spanish flu virus, which has not existed at all, and they've taken it back to the laboratories, and they're testing it, saying, oh, we're doing this because, of course, we want to protect you. But is it possible that they have another agenda? Well, of course, Jerry Guidetti was saying that it's very obvious that we are not getting adequate Tamiflu. Many of the other countries are laying in supplies of Tamiflu for a quarter to a third of their population. Here in the United States, we have stockpiled 2.6 million doses, and we have 300 million people. Now, why is it that England and the Scandinavian countries and European countries have enough money to stockpile Tamiflu for their populations, and we don't have enough money to stockpile it for ours? And could it be that they are going, of course, to then stampede the American people into taking a vaccine, an unknown quantity and potentially dangerous or lethal vaccine? Well, what other thing will we have to do? You can be assured that the government will assure us that the vaccine is perfectly safe, just like they've assured parents for many years. There's nothing to worry about from thimerosal and the vaccine. Even they knew it was destroying the minds of many children. So I don't know what their game is, but you can almost see this whole thing being laid out as sort of a plan, and they're playing with our emotions, and I'm sure that they're going to come up with a vaccine. But I, quite frankly, would not take the vaccine because I do not trust the people in the CDC. I've been there, I've talked to some of these people, and I think some of these people have an entirely different agenda. I talked with, rather than the Center for Disease Control, the Center for Disease Creation. So why don't you pick up the story there, Jerry?
Sure. Well, to just give you a case in point, right now there is a series of tests going on, and I've talked about this with you before. The U.S. is testing some primitive vaccine, some kind of a seed vaccine, an H5N1 type vaccine that they hope will serve as a model for or a seed vaccine for when we finally get hit with a pandemic. Mind you, we have to keep in mind that the H5N1 or all viruses for that matter mutate so rapidly. They mutate in hours sometimes. This is a constant evolution laboratory, constantly mutating. So H5N1 can be exchanging or reassorting genes among themselves, among other H5N1s or H4N2s and so on, so that it's constantly changing. Well, what they wanted to do was start testing a vaccine. All right, now the United States position was that they would pay for, this is laughable, they will pay for a flu vaccine study only if it gets an extra kick from an ingredient that they call an adjuvant. Now, an adjuvant is a chemical additive, and it just kind of kick-starts the immune system. It irritates the immune system, so it boosts the response to the vaccine immediately. Now, we're the only country that insists that the adjuvant be in there. Most countries have not approved the use of adjuvants. They consider them too dangerous. They are trying to create vaccines that do not contain these more dangerous chemical boosters, and so the U.S. has refused to pay for the studies on these new vaccines. They said they'll only pay for tests for an H5N1 vaccine that's boosted by an adjuvant.
And of course, what adjuvant are they going to use? We know that, for instance, they put squalene into the vaccines that were given to the young men who went to the first Gulf War, and over half of them are ill now. And those that are ill all have the squalene in their antibodies. So, and what the squalene does as an adjuvant is to actually foster an autoimmune disease like lupus, similar diseases, similar to rheumatoid arthritis, various types of autoimmune, pulmonary, heart, thyroid diseases. That's why over half of the veterans of the Gulf War are now on some form of permanent disability.
Right.
So,
right.
And then that's what they want to give to the entire American population.
Right. And that's the problem, is the adjuvants are not tested, and there are so many people with hypersensitive immune systems. Well, I happen to be one of them. I have allergies up the wazoo, and, any kind of unusual chemical in my body, it can kick off an immune response in me like crazy. So I am very nervous about taking anything that would have an adjuvant that I might potentially be allergic to. People who are allergic to albumin, egg albumin, for example, cannot take these vaccines because they're produced in eggs, unfortunately.
We're going to be back in just a moment with Jerry Guidetti, and we'll welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Jerry Guidetti, and we're talking about the threat of and the danger of an influenza pandemic. And I would simply ask you to read your newspaper, read several newspapers as I do, and you will find such frequent discussions of this, and you know very well that these articles are appearing in the paper for a reason. Now, for instance, when was the last time you picked up your paper and you read about the 3.5 million people who were killed in this continuing war going on in the Congo today, where the women are being raped and so many of those have been raped who got AIDS? You don't read about that. Well, are the lives of those 3.5 million the women any less, or 3.5 million men and women who are then slaughtered in the Congo, a continuing war, any less important than other people's lives? And what you have to understand is the controlled media focuses our attention on the things they want to be thinking about. Identity theft. Why do they focus on identity theft? Because they want us down the line to be willing to take a chip. That is the obvious solution. They're not making any money out of those ads, but they're putting them on because they are planting ideas in our minds. And they're doing the same thing with the threat of the pandemic. When you understand that we are controlled by what we read, by what we hear, and what we see, and this creates our reality, then you have to begin to ask, why are they doing what they're doing? So pick up the story there, Jerry.
Sure. And even if we were to say that a more innocuous reason for the appearance of these things when we are not prepared is the fact that they want to be able to say, we told you so, we told you it was coming. When we lose 25% of the U.S. population, or 12% even of the U.S. population, to this monster that's coming around the corner, we told you it was coming and we did our best. Their comment, a government spokesman, commented when asked about Tamiflu and why we were so behind. He said, we are now having very aggressive talks with Roche about getting our share. Well, it's a little late, because right now Roche is tuned up and turned on, and it's like the refineries in the United States, that's functioning at highest capacity, and they still do not have enough and will not have enough for this thing. So we're going off on two different levels here. We're trying to produce these vaccines down at the CDC, and they're literally, I mean, I could quote Dr. Cox, who heads up the vaccine division. She said that there are 254 possible combinations with the 8 genes of this particular influenza, H5N1 and H3N2 and so on, 254. And they're going to combine, using genetic engineering, all of these different combinations.
Hold that thought there for just a moment as we bring other stations back on board with us here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Jerry Guidetti was saying that there are 254 different possible combinations of these this avian flu virus and SARS. How can you possibly come up with a vaccine for 254 possibilities of a lethal organism? And of course, quite practically, you can't. Today, ordinarily, what they do is they guess at what they think that the influenza organism is going to be. And then, of course, they make up a vaccine, and they're usually wrong. I mean, that they have been year after year. In fact, recent studies have shown it really didn't do any good. But, of course, if you are foolish enough to take your influenza vaccines, over a period of, say, 5 years, you take 2 to 3 of them, you're between 60 and 65 years of age, your chance of Alzheimer's disease goes up 1,000%. Now, why would they insist on older people taking a vaccine when their CDC's own statistics show it really doesn't do any good, but dramatically increases the incidence of Alzheimer's disease? And if that figure feels, you just find that difficult to believe, that your doctor would recommend that you take something that could be harmful to you and lead to Alzheimer's disease, you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We'll send you a copy of the abstract we got from Dr. Pudenberg's webpage, and you can look it up there on your own, but we'll send you the abstract. You need to understand that this is very real. There really are evil and wicked people out there. And when you understand that, then so many of the things that are going on in the world today really do begin to make some sense. Well, right now, we've got Ed calling in from Aptos. Hi, Ed. Did you have a question or comment?
Brief question. I'll take the answer on the air. Does doxycycline, will that help me at all if that flu comes?
All right, fine. Well, thanks very much, Ed. And the question is, will doxycycline help?
No, those are antimicrobials against bacteria. And bacterial antibiotics, actually, by killing off the bacteria in your body, may harm you even more when you're invaded by a virus. You need a specific antiviral compound, and there are so few available. I think in the entire world, there were only 3 created. Amantadine was one of the best, and then Tamiflu, which is the one that this particular virus seems to be still sensitive to, and one of them, one strain, is amantadine sensitive. But I have to tell you, there isn't enough of either one. Amantadine's a lot cheaper, Tamiflu is a lot more expensive, and yet there probably isn't enough amantadine to go around the world either. We are really facing this thing quite naked here in the United States, and I think they're doing a whole lot of covering themselves for the what-if scenario if this thing hits in 3 months. We almost got wiped out this year with the influenza vaccines because there wasn't enough planned and there wasn't enough manufactured because the money just isn't there. By the way, another interesting thing to bring out here about these vaccines, and I think, Ed, we've answered that question. Did you have anything else you wanted to ask?
Well, no, Ed is gone. But certainly, Jerry, the one thing people can do is there are certain things that will build up your immune system. We'll be doing a program this coming Friday on that.
Great.
What you can do to build up your immune system. I talked to Ken Alibak. Dr. Alibak was the number 2 man in the Soviet biowarfare unit who defected to the United States and went to work here trying to use his knowledge of the Soviet plans for attack on America here in the United States. And when we talked, he said, look, it's foolish. You cannot vaccinate people for all of the potential of threats that there are. He said, I had vaccinations for 52 different organisms. Many of them were multiple shots. He said, I am so allergic. I'm allergic to everything. Mm-hmm. And his theme was build up your immunity. Now, there are many things that you can get and you should have on hand to build up your immunity. That's a subject for this this coming Friday, and I hope our listeners will be here as we go into the various things that you should have. You should have a kit on hand. And if this should happen, you would take these various things. They would help to build up your immunity so that your body would be able to fight these things. You're not going to have any immune response other than what you can generate on your own. And I would think that this would be the most important single thing that you can do. Because if you want to take the vaccine, you can. I will tell you, I will not take it because I know what they've done, for instance, in Kenya and certainly in the Philippines, where they used the vaccine as a vehicle for introducing contraceptive substance into women so they couldn't conceive children. They've used vaccines here in America to give thimerosal toxic doses of mercury up to 85 times the maximum allowable dose for the EPA in one single injection, and they did that repeatedly. And they knew what they were doing to our children. And unfortunately, we've seen the same techniques used over and over again. We're all contaminated with monkey viruses because of the polio vaccine. Why would you grow organisms, a vaccine, a polio virus, in certainly kidney, monkey tissue, and then inject all of those monkey viruses into human beings? And yet that's exactly what they've done. And we can point out that the homosexuals who were foolish enough to take the experimental hepatitis B vaccine in San Francisco back in 1978 and 79, 75% of them came down with AIDS. Gee, I wonder why that was. And the same thing happened in Africa, where the blacks took that same experimental hepatitis B vaccine, and nobody ever talks about it. They say, oh, it isn't in the polio vaccine, it wasn't in the smallpox vaccine, but nobody ever talks about the hepatitis B vaccine. And do you really trust the people who gave that hepatitis B vaccine to the homosexuals? And 75%. We've got the scientific studies out of San Francisco on that. You'll never hear that any other place. Well, right now we've got Steve there calling in from Michigan. Hi, Steve. Do you have a question or comment?
Just a comment. Good evening, Dr. Ms. Goodetti. Amen and amen on the feeding your immune system. I just took the opportunity of your show tonight as a reminder to stock up on some elderberry before the flu season came in this year.
There you go.
You know, there's so many different foods that have antiviral action that the doctors, you know, to completely ignore. I look forward to the show you're going to have on that.
All right, fine. Thanks very much for calling in, Steve.
Good night.
Okay, fine. And so, do you have any thoughts at all on that, Jerry?
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, I just read a great study, I guess about 3 months ago, that astounded everyone in the medical profession at the time because they couldn't imagine why. But they found out that people who are extremely physically active, who walk a lot, work a lot, have good musculature, and so on, are almost immune to influenza viruses. Isn't that interesting?
Yes,
general body health, great immune systems, they appear to have great resistance to influenza viruses.
And, of course, certainly that is good advice for everybody. For those
Absolutely.
Of us who don't have time to do that, we're going to need some adjutants, some helpers. And so,
yes, you bet.
And we're going to be talking more about that. Well, Sherry, before I forget, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the ARC Institute and how people can get in touch with and get information on the seeds that you make available, because there is an organized effort to genetically engineer the seeds so in many instances they will not germinate again, or so that they can put things into these seeds that could be very, very harmful to individuals. So would you like to just quickly cover that here before
sure.
we get through the program all the way?
Sure. First of all, you could reach us at the ARC Institute at 1-800-255-1912, 1-800-255-1912. And our website is ARC, as in Noah's Ark, ARKInstitute.com, ARKInstitute.com. Now, you know, Dr. Stan, that we have for years, you know, my work on genetic engineering was largely in plants. And so we have been focusing on restoring and maintaining, saving the non-hybrid heirloom seeds that have not been genetically engineered, because I've been so concerned about folks losing the ability to grow their own food, turning that very basic God-given right over to a handful of corporate heads. And that's exactly what's happening. We have talked about this on many programs before. We can talk about it again. But the food issue is what brings me to the pandemic issue, because in the case of this kind of societal breakdown that would occur when a pandemic comes, getting food, raising food, is going to be one of your primary concerns, because the death rate, the sickness rate in the culture globally, not just here in the United States, is expected to be horrible. And what you depend on for at your grocery store is not going to be there, even in the words of Dr. Michael Osterholm, who is a highly respected U.S. scientist who deals with infectious disease and bioterrorism threats. Now, we suggest that folks not only store their own food and water in their homes for the potential of any kind of dangerous occurrence, bioterrorism or this, more natural, if it's natural, event such as a pandemic, but we also suggest that you have the ability to raise your own food yourselves using these seeds. The other thing we're going to be doing now, we're going to be serving as a clearinghouse for all of this information on the pandemic, and we are introducing the Global Crisis Advisory. We're going to be contacting and are already contacting all of the global scientists as well as physicians and hospitals in all of these Asian countries. We're going to put all of this data together for people, and even people who aren't on the computer are going to be able to find out on a monthly basis where this thing is, how it's mutating, and what they can do about it in their particular area of the country or the world. This is going to be a global service. Call our 800 number, 800-255-1912, and ask Kristen about it.
And, of course, the website again is?
ARK Institute.com, all one word.
And so I think this important, very, very important information, you're going to have to look at after yourself. And, of course, one of the major themes we keep coming back to here at Radio Liberty is preparation, because I believe we're in for some very, very difficult times. And we can look at this purely from a scientific point of view. We can look at it from the point of view that maybe there are some mistakes being made. The other thing is, maybe there are some wicked people, evil people out there who have an agenda, who really do believe that we'd be far better off if we could kill off 90% of the world's population, as is suggested in the Georgia Guidestones, or so-called American Stonehenge in Elberton, Georgia. And if you haven't seen the pictures of that evil satanic monument, why, you go to my webpage at RadioLiberty.com and just pull down the section on the Georgia Guidestones and understand that they do have satanic ceremonies there, because I went to Elberton and got all the articles out of the local newspaper, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, they do have satanic and naked ceremonies, all sorts of festivals there at these Guidestones. And the fact that you're not hearing about this from elsewhere suggests there's tremendous control over what the American people think. But even over and above the best played plans of men, there are spiritual implications. And if you, of course, read the book Revelation 6:8, you find that there will come a time when terrible things will happen, and a quarter of the world's population will die. And that is, of course, the riders of the pale horse. And if you get out Revelation 6:8 and read that, and, of course, the Hades, pardon me, the coming of the rider of the pale horse, and Hades follows close behind, and power is given unto them to kill a quarter of the population of the world by the sword and by pestilence and by death and by the beasts of the world. Could that sort of thing really ever happen to America? Would God allow it to happen? And I'd say that if God is just, he is not only going to allow it to happen, he's going to bring punishment on this country, because the good people so often have absolutely been willing to not do nothing, and men and women be accomplices to the, or become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. So think about this. Give it serious consideration. Make preparations for yourself and your family, and try to let other people understand that if you're not prepared, who will be? And if you're looking to the government to protect you, why, I think you're going to be in for a very big surprise. Obviously, they're only planning on protecting a very limited number with that 2.6 million doses of Tamiflu. They could buy up as much as they wanted to for every individual, and they're not doing it. So, Jerry, as you put this message out, and I know you do other programs, what sort of response do you get from people?
Well, we do get generally a few phone calls, and people do share with us their own observations, and they also share with us a lot from Revelation, because they also point out that a third of all of the animals are to die, and a third of the birds in the sky are going to die, and so on. And they point this out and say, certainly these are the times. There are a lot of people there. They tend to be rather quiet, but they are preparing, and they're preparing. A lot of them are older people preparing for their children and for their families, and their married children with grandchildren, because people get so busy working, Dr. Stan. They get so caught up in the day-to-day activity that they take so little time to sit down, take a deep breath, and look at the big picture. And That's why we felt it was so important to try to pull together the threads here at the Arc Institute, pull together the threads of the stories that are appearing, many of them with errors in them or being incomplete and misleading, saying, for example, even today, an article appeared that said there has been no transmission of avian influenza from person to person. That's either a bold-faced lie or it's a bold-faced error, one or the other. It's unconscionable because it gives people a false sense of security.
Either that or they're trying intentionally to confuse them. And you'll see that...
The other possibility.
In fact, the vice president says we're just about all through the war over there. We're winning the war. And then the secretary of defense, Rumsfeld, comes out and says, you know, it's going to be many more years. And somebody else says it's going to be 14 years at least that we're there. And so you don't know what to believe. And it's almost as if sometimes as I read these conflicting reports, I think somebody's playing with my mind and intentionally confusing the American people. And if you give them so many false bits of information, they get so confused, they don't do anything. And I would suggest that this is not the time not to be making preparations. This is the time to make preparations. And the verse, as it says in the Bible, you know, you can look at the sky, you can read the signs of the times. Red sky in the morning, wise sailors take a warning. Red sky at night, the sailors delight. But there certainly, you can tell what the future is happening. And, of course, you can make your preparations accordingly. So our plea is, of course, get hold of Jerry, get her information, and begin thinking about what you would do if the wonderful world, the utopian society we live in, should suddenly grind to a halt. And if you read that article by Dr. Osterholm in the latest Foreign Affairs magazine, that's July, August issue of Foreign Affairs, he writes a second article, and Dr. Osterholm talks about the shutting down of the American food supply.
Right. And he says that there is going to be a very small amount of food available. Again, keep in mind, this is not a man who has a bent toward speaking in sensational terms. This is a very objective, very conservative scientist who said that we scientists are going to be held responsible and accountable for the equivalent of a 9-1-1 commission after this pandemic and say, why didn't you do more? Why didn't you inform the American people? And unfortunately, we're here trying to inform them, serve as a kind of clearinghouse of that information, and we're hoping folks are listening, Dr. Stan.
Well, I appreciate all the information you're getting together and your website, and then you will be putting together a newsletter, won't you?
Yes, I sure are. That's it, Global Crisis Advisory.
All right,
and
fine.
And it's going to deal with food as well.
All right, fine. We're going to be back in just a few minutes to wrap up this evening's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Jerry Guidetti. Jerry, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. What thoughts would you like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I guess it would be that we just can't take for granted what we have here in this country and the kind of lifestyle we have. You call it a utopian society. Folks don't realize, but that's a very good description of the way we live today compared to the way people live around the world and third world and developing countries. And we unfortunately tend to get a little bit complacent and maybe even a little arrogant about that lifestyle. And the reality is that lifestyle is supported 100% by technology, by oil supply uninterrupted, and unfortunately all of the transportation that gets that around. And when I look at it as a biologist, I see two things. I see food and water, the basic essential things to live. And if folks don't recognize that they are 100% dependent, they are dependent on this entire superstructure that we have created to deliver the basics for human life and for animal life on this planet. And anything that interferes with that, bioterrorism or a natural event like a natural pandemic, this one may be aided, of course, by bioterrorism, we don't know. But one way or the other, a pandemic is coming. And it's going to bring home very rapidly how 100% dependent you are on this structure. And I don't think that's an overstatement. I don't think that's alarmism. But if it's alarmism that's going to get you to move and consider the fact that you have to take care of your children and your family, perhaps for long periods of time when schools are shut down, school auditoriums become hospitals, and triage centers when there are going to be more burials than people have ground to bury them in and so on. That kind of world can indeed happen here. And well, that sounds like garbage, but it's not. It's real.
And, of course, I've seen pictures of what my town was like back in 1918.
Uh-huh.
And everybody was wearing face masks.
That's right.
In fact, the only vehicles on the streets were the trucks that were carrying the hearses to the burial yards. And,
that's right.
And all meetings were stopped. All commerce were stopped.
That's right.
I mean, people were dying by the droves all across America. And I don't know, I think we lost probably 600,000-700,000 people here in the United States, 20 million people throughout the world. People cannot imagine that thing ever happening again, and yet everything, I believe, is in place to have that happen again. At least make your preparations and hope and pray that it does not happen, that God is merciful on this country. But, of course, I remember that God is just. His justice will not sleep forever. Jerry, thank you so very much for being with us.
It's always a pleasure, Dr. Stan. You take care.
Good night, and God bless you.
God bless.
And the Christ Help is Jerry Guidetti. Hope you enjoyed our program here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and of course there's a great deal that you can do, and we'll be covering a lot of that on Friday, about the things that you need to be getting to laying in, the things that will help you to combat pandemic, to build up your immune system, because you're going to have to build it up and be able to build it up for your family. And there's certain things like garlic and garlic products and various types of oil of oregano and selenium and vitamin C. And of course, Bill Sardi will cover that in a lot more detail. But put yourself the things aside, the things that you would need for an emergency situation, and the things that you would need if you couldn't go down to the store to buy things, but mostly the things that you could use to build up your immune system for what lies ahead. Well, we hope that many of you out there, if you would like to look into this subject more, will want to get our 4-tape set on population control, or our video on population control, or our syllabus on sustainable development, which tells you the master plan of the people who rule the world. It really came out of the Rio Summit back in 1992. And, of course, that was headed by Maurice Strong, who has said, and you'll actually read there his words, where he talks about how if you could just create a secret movement of very wealthy people whose goal was to collapse the economy of the world. And the only way you're going to save the world is simply to collapse the economy of the world. And, of course, with that, all the complications would come along. And people say, that is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Well, it would be ridiculous if you didn't have people who had a different worldview. It would be ridiculous if you had people who did not believe that the world would be better off with maybe only half the population, or a third the population, or a quarter of the population, or 10% of the current population. You will actually, if you get the Sustainable Development Syllabus, why you can read my Population Control Agenda monograph, will give you the quotations for many of the people, powerful people, who rule the world and what they really think. And, of course, if you'd like a copy of Jacques Cousteau's remarks in the UNESCO Courier, November of 1991, we actually will be glad to send that to you if you give us a call, where Jacques Cousteau talked about the necessity of killing, eliminating was his word, 350,000 people a day. That's 350,000 people a day. So if you'd like to actually see that, we have it in both English and in French. And, of course, we ask you, of course, to you can go to my website and pull down the Population Control Agenda monograph. It is up there. If you'd like to get the material on population control, the population control 4-tape set or video, like more information on the sustainable development syllabus or sustainable development tapes or videos, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to know what they're doing with genetically modified food, why, there's a book called Seeds of Deception. We have a 4-tape set on that genetically modified food. We have a book called GMOs, Beware the Genetically Modified Foods. And then, of course, we'll be having tomorrow afternoon Dr. Boyd Graves talking about the genetic engineering of the AIDS virus. And, of course, I've actually have, we don't have copies of the book for sale, but we do have in our library The Full Disclosure by Gary Glum, who tells that one of the scientists who worked to create the AIDS virus came to him and was dying and said, "I want you to know we genetically engineered the virus." I've talked to another leading scientist who told me that two scientists have come to him and told them they were on the project that, of course, created the AIDS virus. And if you doubt that this was planned, we'll be glad to send you, free of charge, the congressional testimony by Dr. MacArthur in, actually, 1969. Just call and ask for General MacArthur's testimony. Our number is 1-800-544-8927. And General MacArthur, pardon me, Dr. MacArthur asked for $10 million to create a new disease for which there'd be no immune response. And, of course, he said, many people don't want us to do it. It's another form of mass killing, but give us the money. We'll be back in just a few minutes here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Dr. Lorraine Day, who was Chief of Orthopedics at San Francisco General Hospital for a number of years, and probably if she'd stayed at the University of California, why, she'd be a full professor in charge of a department either there or someplace else in the world. But she got involved in the controversy over the fact that we were not using standard public health techniques to try to stop the AIDS epidemic. And back in the 1989 and 1990, Lorraine and I were just involved in this battle, and she was certainly one of the chief spokesmen for trying to take an intelligent approach to stop the epidemic. Why not treat it like a disease? Oh, we couldn't do that. Why, we'd drive it underground. It could lead to discrimination. Why, we might get false positives. Why, we could ruin people's lives. Oh, we couldn't try to stop this disease. We couldn't test people or identify who had it. But everybody was just to pretend that everybody else had the disease, and if you just protected yourself, and we would pass out little jars of 10% bleach to IV drug users, because they would wash out their needles and syringes. Well, that, of course, it didn't do any good. They knew it didn't do any good, but they gave the IV drug users the idea that it was going to do some good. And after about 6 or 8 years, they suddenly said, gee, it doesn't work. Imagine that. Oh, shucks. And Do you remember those days, Lorraine?
Oh, do I ever. You know, it's all so ludicrous when you put it together like that, and it was ludicrous when we were doing it. It seemed like everybody had gone mad.
Well, sometimes I think there were just a few of us who were sane, and everybody right. thought we were crazy.
And of course, it's just gotten worse since then.
Well, of course, Dr. Dade at the present time is really trying to educate people about a diet, and instead of putting bones together, she's trying to help people to reconstruct their bodies with proper nutrition. So I'm going to let Lorraine pick up from there.
Well, for those of you who have not heard my story before, I'll just briefly tell you that, as Stan has pointed out, I'm an orthodox physician. I'm an orthopedic surgeon like Stan, and I was trained in all orthodox techniques, but I developed cancer in 1993. It was biopsied at both Loma Linda University and Scripps Hospital in La Jolla, and it was breast cancer, and I refused all orthodox therapy. I refused chemotherapy. I refused radiation. I refused mastectomy because those things do not work. And you'll say, oh, well, maybe they work on some people. No, they don't work on anybody. And the reason I say that is both chemotherapy and radiation destroy your immune system. And even though it may make the tumor seem to go away for a while, the tumor will always come back. And when it does, if you don't have enough immune system left from all the damage that those treatments have done, you will die. And many people do die. Some people do survive, but not because of the treatment. It's in spite of it. I refused mastectomy because I didn't get breast cancer because I had too many breasts. Cutting organs off or out does not solve the problem, because it's the things that you're doing every day, the way we're eating and living, that give us disease, including cancer. So unless you change those things, you cannot truly get well. So I changed everything about my life. It took me a while to figure out how to do this, and I changed my diet to a totally vegan diet. I started getting a lot of sunlight because sunlight actually reduces the size of internal cancer tumors.
Hold that thought, right, and we'll be back in just a moment. All right, well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Rain Day, and she's simply going into her experiences. She began to analyze why people have cancer and what you can do actually to combat that cancer. And, of course, she points out that both chemotherapy and radiation, which are the standard techniques for treatment of cancer, are certainly destroy the immune system. And if you have an immune system, why, you're not going to get, you know, a cancer. It's just not, because we're forming cancer cells in our body all the time, but our immune system ordinarily will tend to destroy those. So you pick up the story from there, Lorraine.
Well, I started changing, as I said, everything about my life. I had been an agnostic for all of my adult life. I started spending a lot of time reading the Bible and praying, realizing that disease is really starts as a spiritual problem. It starts because we want to live and eat our own way rather than the way God intended. And so I started searching the Bible, I started searching the medical literature, and the ways that I, the 10-step plan that I use to get well is all well documented in the medical literature. But we are not taught that in medical school. Neither Stan or I nor any other doctor is taught how to get people really well in medical school. The other two steps are having the right attitude and unselfishness, learning how to be benevolent to our, even our enemies, loving our enemies, and doing good to those who hate us. And you have to let all the grudges go. When I started doing that plan, which is all simple and it's virtually free except for food, I started getting well. It took me 8 months for the cancer to go away and another 10 months for me to regain my health. If you want to see how bad I was, you can go to my website at www.drday.com and click on radio or other when you come to the home page, and you will see I had a tumor the size of a softball on my chest. And I got well. I did not have a mastectomy. I had a portion of the tumor removed just for pain relief, and they sent me home to die. At one point, I was bedridden for 6 months. I was not expected to live through the night at one point, and here I am alive and well 12 years later and totally cancer-free and can do everything I did when I was 25 years old. So the plan does work. Many other people have gotten well by this same plan. But the pharmaceutical companies do not want you to know that you can get well without drugs. And they are a very powerful force, and they control a large part of what doctors learn when they're in medical school.
There's no question at all about that. And, of course, there are all sorts of laws in California that limit what a doctor can actually do. And there are many types of therapy he cannot use. Well, why not allow it? Why not give patients a choice? But they're not to have a choice in free America. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Day was simply telling us that faced with an inoperable cancer, sent home to die, why she set out on this campaign to learn how to handle the cancer, and not only with diet, but with sunlight and with water and with a mental attitude and with all sorts of things that really transform her life. And she has a very, very good program that people follow, that and people across the country have followed this, and many of them had dramatic results from this, because it's all dependent upon getting your immune system and your body to cure itself. Is that the fair statement, Lorraine?
That's correct. And this doesn't just work for cancer. It works for virtually all diseases. After all, God says he'll heal all of our diseases. He says that in Psalms 103:3. But then he tells us how he's going to do it in Deuteronomy 7:11 to 15. He said, if you obey my laws, and that includes his health laws, my commandments and my decrees, I will keep you free from every disease. And yet Christians around the world are dying every day of all these terrible diseases. So then, you know, is God not telling the truth, or is there something that Christians haven't really understood about how you get well? We have to do it God's way. We can't do it man's way. If you remember when God told Noah that there was going to be a flood on the earth and he would save him, he told him how he was going to save him, and then he told him, you build the boat. It's your job to build the boat, but you've got to build it exactly the way I tell you. And that's why when I got well, I had to do it exactly God's way. And you can say, how do you know this is God's way? Well, everything in the plan I used to get well was created by the Lord, and it is in its natural form. God has given every generation since creation the way to be well, and it's available to every country around the world, and it's virtually free. Everything in the plan I use to get well is free except for food, and you have to buy that anyway. There are laws that govern our world. We have the law of gravity, and you cannot resist the law of gravity. If you do, you will have terrible consequences. Well, the same thing is true about your health. If you aren't careful about what food you eat, what you drink, how you treat your body, what thoughts you put into your mind, whether or not you forgive others or hold grudges, or whether you're filled with anger, all of those things will tend to destroy you. And if you follow God's way, you learn to love your enemies, get rid of your grudges, eat right, eat the things that God has made in their natural form, you'll live a long and healthy life. And that's what everybody wants to do. People say, well, I don't want to live to be old because I don't want to be sick. Well, you don't have to be sick. As I said, I can do everything I did when I was 25, and I'm almost 70 years old. I've got the energy of a 25-year-old. And you can be that way, too. And even if you're sick now, you can turn it around. I remember I was so sick at one point I was not expected to live through the night. And now I am totally well. I go to the gym 3 times a week. I play tennis. I run. I've run competitively in the last 2 years. I'm planning to run a competitive race in San Francisco in a short time. I can do anything I did, and I'm almost 70.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, of course, the approach as far as food is concerned. Although the food is only part of this, but it certainly is a very important part,
right,
isn't it?
Well, first of all, there are many, many articles. I have actually 9 videos on health, and I have written recently a workbook. And much of this information is in a workbook that goes along with the videos that helps you implement the plan on the videos. The workbook is entitled Getting Started on Getting Well. And it shows in there that I have 17 pages of abstracts, synopses of articles from the medical literature showing why this plan works. There's a very major correlation with eating of animal products. And when I say animal products, I'm talking about meat, poultry, fish, dairy products, including milk and cheese, and eggs. When you eat dairy products, there is an enormous correlation with cancer and virtually every other disease. Because animal products take a long time to digest, they stay in your body and your intestines a long time, and when they do, they putrefy. When they putrefy, they cause toxin formation, and you absorb those toxins, and those can be very carcinogenic, meaning cancer-forming. And so many diseases are either totally caused or in large part caused by eating of animal products. In America, the incidence of cancer in 1909 was 1 out of 33. By 1985, it was 1 out of 3, and now it's 1 out of 2. Well, what's the major thing that's changed? The major thing that's changed is our diet. Back in 1909, there was no fast food. People were eating fruits and vegetables out of their orchards and gardens. If they ate any meat, it was a small amount because they couldn't afford any more, and it was the cow or the sheep or the something in their backyard that they grew. It didn't have, wasn't full of hormones and pesticides and all that, but they still didn't eat very much of it. If they had a cup of coffee, it was one cup in the morning, and it was 8 ounces or less. Now people go into a gas station store, fast store, and get maybe 64 ounces of Coke or huge cups of coffee. They're drinking huge amounts of caffeine and caffeinated beverages of all sorts. And the incidence of sugar eating has gone up tremendously. The average American eats about a pound of sugar every 2 days or less. And so they're taking all of that into their body, plus they're eating huge amounts of animal products. The amount of grains people ate in 1909 was 300 pounds, and they ate 200 pounds of potatoes. Those are natural potatoes, not French fries from McDonald's. By 1985, the amount of potato eating had dropped by 50%. The amount of grain eating had dropped by 50%. The amount of milk drinking had doubled, the amount of meat eating had doubled, and the amount of chicken eating had gone up 300%. And the incidence of cancer had gone from 1 out of 33 to 1 out of 3. And I said, now it's 1 out of 2. So what happened during that period of time? We had changed from mainly a plant-based diet, a diet of fruits, grains, and vegetables, to a diet that was mainly, largely, of animal products, meat, poultry, fish, dairy, and eggs. And that is the big cause. And, of course, you throw in also all of this coffee drinking. Coffee and tea are diuretics. They take more water out of your body than comes in with the drink. That's the same for Coke and Pepsi and all caffeinated sodas. And so people are drinking all of this caffeine, which is dehydrating their bodies. They're not drinking water. And the body loses 10 glasses of water every day just by living. You lose it from perspiration even when it's not hot. You lose it because you're breathing and your breath is moist, and you're breathing 24 hours a day and losing water that way. And you lose it because you have to take huge amounts of water out of your cells for every meal to put that into your digestive tract, your stomach, to make digestive juices. And you lose all that through your colon and your kidneys. And so you must replace those 10 glasses. And for every day you don't drink 10 glasses of water, you're getting farther behind. So the body is getting dehydrated, which makes it sick, which suppresses the immune system. It's eating all of these animal products full of fat and protein and no fiber, and so that suppresses the immune system. It's eating a lot of sugar, and then people are all stressed out and they're angry about lots of things, and all of these things suppress the immune system, so naturally the body is going to get sick. It's going to get one of many different diseases, cancer, heart disease, neurologic disease like Lou Gehrig's disease and Parkinson's, and it's going to have postmenopausal problems and osteoporosis. By the way, the main cause of osteoporosis is taking in animal products into the body, particularly milk. Milk and meat and poultry and fish, all of those things actually cause osteoporosis, even though the milk and dairy industry will tell you you need milk to prevent osteoporosis. They're lying to you. These things, when you take animal products into your body, they form acid in your body, and your body neutralizes that acid by taking the calcium out of the bones and using that to neutralize the acid. So the more milk you drink, the more osteoporosis you will get.
And so basically, of course, your diet is really primarily vegetarian. It's to stay away from the the milk and the cheese and the meat and things.
That's right.
That.
I don't eat any milk. I don't drink any milk. I don't eat any cheese. I don't eat any dairy products. I don't eat any eggs. And I don't eat any meat, poultry, or fish. And people say, well, what do you eat? Well, I can tell you this. There are a lot more vegetables, grains, and fruits than there are different kinds of meat, poultry, and fish. In my workbook called Getting Started on Getting Well, I've got over 100 recipes. I have menus, and you can eat very, very well. My husband had eaten meat all of his life when we got married a year ago. He became a vegan totally, to stop all animal products, and I can tell you, he not only feels good, he feels much lighter after he eats a meal which has no animal products in it, and within the first year, his cholesterol dropped 60 points, that's 60 points, without doing anything except changing his diet.
Well, I think that's wonderful. Of course, Lorraine's husband is one of my favorite people. Congressman Tannemeyer, now out of the Congress, but he was one of the people who inspired me when I was battling the AIDS epidemic here in California. He was battling the AIDS epidemic back in Washington, D.C., and I'm glad he's really doing well.
That's right.
All right, fine. Well, now, of course, now what about the entry Lou Gehrig's disease? I had a fellow call me the other day, and one of his good friends had Lou Gehrig's disease, and, you know, a very productive, very capable individual. And, you know, the doctors have absolutely nothing to offer. He's now confined in a wheelchair, progressive loss of function of his legs, and generalized weakness. The problem is that medicine has no solution for some of these so-called degenerative diseases. And when we get back, of course, I'm going to let Lorraine talk a little bit about some of these unexplained diseases. And, of course, in many instances, not in all, I don't think we can guarantee that, but at least in some instances, why there have been dramatic improvement from people who had these so-called untreatable chronic disabling diseases. Using simply the 10-point program that Lorraine has. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Lorraine, would you like to talk a little bit about Lou Gehrig's disease,
sure.
Some of these other neurological diseases that are really so tragic because many times they'll strike people in the prime of their life, relatively young people with families and all sorts of hopes and aspirations, and medicine has nothing to offer them.
Well, first of all, virtually all disease is caused by three things: malnutrition, dehydration, and stress. Malnutrition, because people are eating lots of calories. In fact, many people are becoming very obese. But they're starving their bodies at the same time because they're not eating the proper food. If you have a diet of steaks and hamburgers and hot dogs and coffee and milkshakes and sweets and things like that, your body can't get enough nutrition to make healthy cells. The only place your body can get the nutrients it needs to make cells is by what you put in your mouth. So every spoonful of forkful of food either makes you sicker or it makes you healthier. There's nothing that's neutral. And so malnutrition is one of the biggest causes of disease. You cannot have a healthy body unless you put the proper food into it. Next is dehydration, which I've already talked about. Your body loses water, you've got to replace it, and you've got to stop drinking the things that dehydrate your body. Alcohol dehydrates your body. Caffeine dehydrates your body. Chocolate dehydrates your body. Plus, it's got a huge amount of sugar in it, which is very bad for you. So you've got to hydrate your body properly by drinking enough pure water. The body is 75% water, the brain is 85% water, and the nervous system is 85% water. And then the other thing is stress. Stress is a killer. Stress will also dehydrate your body. Stress is dehydrating, and dehydration is stressful, and so you get in this continuous circle downward. Well, when we talk about the brain and nervous system, we get into the neurological diseases, one of which is Lou Gehrig's disease. Another one that's becoming very prevalent is Parkinson's. And Stan, after I talk about Lou Gehrig's disease, I'm going to give you a real surprise with the Parkinson's that you may not know about. Lou Gehrig's disease is, again, a disease of the nervous system. Its real name is ALS, or amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. It starts as a paralysis, starting with the lower extremities, the feet and the ankles and the legs, and then it creeps up the body till it gets to the point where you can't move your chest muscles, and then it goes up higher, and eventually you really pretty much suffocate. And it's a very disabling disease. Now, interestingly enough, a man named Stephen Hawking, who many people have heard about, he's considered the most brilliant American, most brilliant man in the world, since Einstein. And he wrote all about the black holes. I think he's an astrophysicist. But he is in a wheelchair, confined to a wheelchair, can't talk, and really can't move his hands. He has Lou Gehrig's disease. So he may be the smartest man in knowledge in the world, but he has no wisdom. Wisdom comes from God. He doesn't even know how to be well. He could be well with this 10-step program. So Lou Gehrig's disease is a very debilitating disease. The doctors will tell you there is no hope. It cannot be cured. It is just a downward course, and then you die, and sometimes you die a pretty horrible death.
Hold that off there for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Dr. Lorraine Day. And, of course, we're talking about Lou Gehrig's disease, anterior lateral sclerosis, or ALS. And, of course, the thing is that medicine really has nothing to offer. I mean, you have a chronic disease, you're going to die from it, it's just a matter of time. And it is really a horrible way to die, because many times it's a progressive disease. And so Lorraine, of course, commented that some of the people that she knows who've actually had this disease, who've actually gotten onto this altered lifestyle, this altered form of diet, and all the other issues that are involved it's a 10-step program.
That's correct.
And of course, they have actually improved. So I'll let you tell some of those stories.
All right. Well, with Lou Gehrig's disease, as I say, the doctors will tell you that it is incurable, and they'll give you some medicines to try to make you more comfortable, or they say slow the progress of the disease. But all medicines have side effects, and no medicine actually treats the underlying cause of the disease, because doctors will say they don't know what causes it. But in fact, these diseases, it is known what causes them. We know the kinds of things you need to have a good functioning immune system. As I said, the body is 75% water. The brain and nervous system are 85% water. If you don't have enough water in your body, you're not going to have a properly functioning nervous system. On top of that, when you eat too much sugar, it excites the nervous system and also suppresses it, so it can't work right. It decreases your memory. It decreases the ability of the nervous cells to work properly. And then when you drink fluoride in the water or have fluoride in your toothpaste, that is suppresses the brain as well. All of these things work into it. When you eat meat and other animal products, meat contains arachidonic acid. It suppresses the temporal lobe function. The temporal lobe function is where you make your judgments and your moral judgments and your decisions. And so all of these things play into it, plus animal products dehydrate your body. So, and stress, of course, is a big killer. Well, about 2 years ago, I was speaking up in Canada, in Vancouver, B.C., and a man came up to me, and he said, I want to tell you a story. I saw him walk up to me from at least 20 feet away. He walked absolutely normal, had a normal gait. He was about 70 years old. And he said that about, I think it was 2 or 3 years before that, he had been diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease. And by that time, he had symptoms for quite some time and hadn't gone to the doctor, partly because I think he was in denial. But he went to the doctor, and they said, you have Lou Gehrig's disease. And, of course, he figured that was a death sentence. And they all looked very grim when they said it. And I guess it was about 2 years ago. And so then they said, probably by the next time you'll come, you'll need to be brought by ambulance, because your disease seems to be progressing very rapidly. So he was to come back in 3 months. And when they called him in 3 months to send an ambulance for him. He said, no, he didn't want an ambulance. And they said, well, how are you going to get here? He said, I'm going to drive. And they said, we'll have a wheelchair for you. He said, no, I don't need a wheelchair. And what had happened, he told me directly. He said, I got a hold of your tape. Someone put me onto your tapes. I started on the plan. And he said, the turnaround was very rapid. He said, now, again, it doesn't, not always is it that rapid. Sometimes it takes many months and a year or so. But he started on the plan. He eliminated all animal products from his diet. He started drinking lots of water. He started getting out in the sunlight. He started doing all of the other things in the plan, getting plenty of fresh air. And so he was able to start turning his disease around. He actually drove into the hospital. He walked into the doctor's office. They could hardly believe their eyes. He had had such a dramatic turnaround because he had really embraced the whole plan right off the bat. Sometimes people start on it and they play around and they're still taking drugs. He stopped his drugs. Now, I don't suggest you stop your drugs abruptly because that can be dangerous, but he hadn't been on them very long, and he got off them pretty rapidly, and he turned his whole disease around. It had been about, a year, year and a half, 2 years, whatever it was, from the time he was diagnosed, and he had been on the plan for a year by the time I saw him, and he was walking absolutely normal. He said he was totally asymptomatic when he had barely been able to walk just 2 years before.
And so, what you're really doing is harnessing the body to heal itself.
That's correct. That's correct. And do you have to take a break right now?
Yeah, we've got about 30 seconds.
Okay, well, the body is meant to heal itself. You know, if you cut yourself, if you just leave that cut alone, it will heal. The only way you keep it from healing is to pour dirt in it or keep picking it open. The body is meant to heal, and whatever disease you have, your body can heal itself if you just stop damaging it by these things. And when we come back, we'll talk about Parkinson's.
All right, we'll be back here in just a moment with Dr. Lorraine Day, and we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, our guest this evening, Dr. Lorraine Day. And let's talk about Parkinson's disease. And then when we have all of our stations back with us, why we will want you to get your web page and other information out. But right now, why don't you tell our listeners about the Parkinson's disease and something new having to do with that?
Well, first of all, as I've said before, when I was sick with my cancer, I had symptoms of many other diseases. I had the what we call the pill-rolling tremor of Parkinson's in my right hand, where your hand shakes like you're kind of rolling a pill in your hand. And I had symptoms of multiple sclerosis in my left leg and left arm. I had numbness, and I always felt like someone was grabbing my left arm. Well, as I started getting well from my cancer, all these other symptoms started going away, too, and they have all gone away. So I realized that all these diseases are related because they're all caused by varying degrees of the same three things: malnutrition, dehydration, and stress. Well, Stan, you have talked many times to my secretary, Sue. Sue Vincent. Well, she had been gone. She had worked for me, and then she left. She and her husband moved to Arizona probably about 7-9 years ago, and then she was there 2 years, and she came back. Well, when she first came back, she started developing some Dupuytren's contractures in her hand, and that's where you start getting kind of a knot in the palm of your hand, which has a tendency to draw your fingers down. She had never had that before, and she was developing that, and she didn't know what was going on. Well, then she started getting weakness in her hands, and then she started getting weakness in her legs, and she started losing a lot of weight. And then it became apparent that she had Parkinson's, and she developed a beginning pill rolling tremor. She lost her a lot of her balance. She got to the point where she could barely use her hands. This happened over a number of years, and it was so slow that she didn't realize that anything was wrong. But when I took a look at her, it was clear she was developing Parkinson's, and she had started having that steppage gait where she couldn't control when she turned from left to right. And then she started falling a lot. And so she got to the point where 8 months ago she couldn't work at all. And she had been eating right, she had been drinking her water, but she had a lot of other issues, things that had happened before in her life. And we don't even know all the things that are going on in our life. We have a tendency to stuff them down inside. And only God can bring them up and show them to us. I had to get rid of a lot of anger I had against, I had had a bad marriage.
Hold that thought right there for just a moment, and we'll be right back here. All right, well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest, Dr. Lorraine Day, and she was just discussing her secretary, who'd been with her for many years and left and come back again, who, of course, said, although she'd been eating right, why she'd developed the pill-rolling type of tremor in her hands and the instability in her legs that we see so characteristically in Parkinson's disease, and was just sort of gradually progressing downwards. She was eating right, but there were other issues in her life, probably emotional, that she hadn't faced. So pick up the story there, Lorraine.
That's right. When I was sick, I had to, I'd been through a bad marriage and a custody battle for my children. I had to get rid of all that anger, all that grudge holding, write to my ex-husband asking him for forgiveness, writing to his wife. Those were difficult letters to write. Well, Sue had some issues in her life, too, and things just kept getting worse and worse because she didn't understand. She understood she had some issues, but she didn't understand them clearly, and it was only over time that the Lord could bring those up and show them to her with what she needed to do to resolve those issues. So she got so bad that she could no longer work. She got to the point where she couldn't even turn herself over in bed. She got to the point where she couldn't even wash her hair or bathe herself. And she had been a real workout person. She had gone to the gym on a regular basis. She was a big hiker and she was in very, very good shape. She lost 30 pounds and she was a small girl. She was only 5 foot, I think one or two, and normally weighed 110 pounds and she weighs, less than 85 pounds now. And so finally, she resolved those issues just about a month ago, and she has now started turning around. She was never, as I said, she wasn't able to carry anything, even an envelope. She couldn't carry anything, and now she can make the bed. She can now read for an hour when she could only sit up for 10 minutes at a time. She's starting to go out for walks, and she's clearly turning around. And it's an amazing recovery. She can turn herself over in bed. She can sleep comfortably. For a long time, she couldn't sleep at night more than a few hours, and now she can sleep perfectly well all through the night, and she is beginning to get well. Now, the interesting thing is her brother also has Parkinson's, and he has been trying to get her to take drugs. She refused all drugs. She refused any therapy that doctors would give her. She trusted in the Lord. She kept on course, learning to forgive everyone who'd ever wronged her, drinking lots of water and fresh vegetable juice and eating the proper diet and getting out in the sun and all that. And now she's turning around. Her brother, who's had Parkinson's, has taken every drug that they are anxious to give him, and he is worse and worse and worse and has decided that, you know, he's never going to be well. And here she's already turning around, and I can't tell you how long it will be before she's back. It took me 18 months to get well, and I don't know how long it'll take her, but she's clearly on the path of tremendous improvement just in 1 month.
Well, that's certainly gratifying to hear. And, of course, you get letters from people out all across the country, don't you, who have various types of chronic disabling disease,
well,
or cancer?
Not only that, cancer. Oh, many people have gotten well from cancer, people who've gotten well from Parkinson's, people who have gotten well from seizures, terrible seizures that they couldn't control. And then they started changing the way they're eating and living, and the seizures went away. People with trigeminal neuralgia, which is called tic douloureux, a very painful problem in the face where the nerves are irritated. People who have that completely gone away. People who've gotten rid of their high blood pressure, their heart disease, virtually every problem you can imagine, they get well from when they start on the plan. But you can't fool around with the plan. You've got to do it all the way, because Disease is a multifactorial disease, meaning it's caused by many different factors. It's not just one thing. People write and they say, well, I've been on your diet. Well, the diet's important, but it's only 10% of the plan. Or people will say, well, I'm drinking water now. Well, fine, drink water, but you've got to eat right. You've got to get rid of all your anger and your grudge holding. The number one cause of death in America, by the way, is anger. Anger causes the production of cortisone from your adrenal glands and adrenaline, and the cortisone suppresses your immune system, so you cannot fight disease. All of these things we have to get under control, and I found that the only way I could get them under control was to give my troubles to the Lord. And I had been an agnostic for virtually all of my adult life. I learned that we don't have the ability in ourselves to develop the habits and to have the strength to do what we need to do. So many people have said to me, you know, well, I could never eat like that. Well, are you going to let what you want to eat control whether you live or die? I would hope not, because I didn't want to die. I was willing to give up all the foods that I might have enjoyed before because I didn't want to die. And if you hang on to the way you want to eat or the way you want to live to the point of death, well, what a tragedy that is. And so people say, well, I don't like to eat that way. And my answer to them is, what does that have to do with it? It doesn't matter whether you like it or not. You have to learn how to eat to live, not live to eat. And so we have to do what's right for our bodies and not just do what we want to do. Children want to do what they want to do. But when we grow up and become adults, we ought to have enough fortitude to get our bodies under control so we do what's right and not just like a child do what we want to do. If you do that, you can be well, whether it's from Parkinson's, whether it's from Lou Gehrig's disease, any of those things, we can get well from them. Because remember, God says he forgives all our sins and heals all our diseases. And I'm not talking about miraculous healings where you go to some prayer service and you raise your hands to heaven. I'm not saying it can't be done that way, although I can tell you that many of those are not real, but I'm not saying it can't be done that way. But anybody can get well on a plan where they just change the things that cause disease in their life and learn how to do things that heal their bodies and build their immune system. Then everyone could be well.
Well, let's get your web page out there and the telephone number. People
All right.
would like to get in touch with you.
All right. The website is www.drday.com. That's www.drday.com, drday.com. When you get to the home page, it will say, how did you hear about Dr. Day? And it'll say radio, TV, or other. Click on radio or other. That will take you to my personal website. And there's a lot of information on that website about many different things, health and AIDS and various other things, besides just the videos and the books that I have. There's other much information that's free, including how you get your children well from attention deficit disorder or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. You can see that on the website. You don't have to buy anything. You can just see how you can get your children well. And the telephone number, if you're not on the internet, the telephone number to call is 1-800-574-2437. That's 1-800-574-2437.
Well, let me ask you, what do you do for attention deficit disorders, or attention deficit hyperactivity disorders, or how about autism? Have you had any results with autism?
Well, autism, yes. Autism is really, the main cause of autism seems to be vaccinations,
right.
The mercury that's in vaccinations. And I can't tell you of any child I know of who has reversed their autism by the 10-step plan, but I can tell you, the child could only get somewhat better, even if they're not totally cured. You feed them right, and you start detoxifying their body, and you can have enormous improvement. So autism, but what you want to do is you want to prevent autism by not vaccinating your children. Vaccinations are neither safe nor are they effective, and they have all sorts of terrible things in them that you can get, such as mercury, which is used as a preservative. All these vaccinations are made in various kinds of cell lines that are infected, whether they're animal cells or human cells. And so you don't want to take vaccinations, even though we've all been brainwashed, especially those of us in medicine. I have been brainwashed. I had vaccinations. I had my children vaccinated. I'm terribly embarrassed to say that I was so stupid to allow that to happen. But we in medicine are totally brainwashed. And isn't that right, Stan?
It is. In fact, it's so interesting. When I talk to people, they all say, well, I'm pro-vaccine, but, you know, and then they'll give you the reason for they're concerned about the mercury in the vaccines. But nobody ever wants to go back and say, are we really helping anybody? What are the real statistics? Show me how the dramatic number of people's lives we've saved with these vaccines. And they really can't do that.
Well, the answer is, yeah, there's a wonderful little book called Vaccines, Are They Safe and Effective? By Neil Miller, N-E-I-L, Miller. You can look it up on the internet and find that book. I don't carry it, but on one of several of my videos, I give the information on where you can buy that book. He points out that the diseases such as polio and smallpox and measles and all of those were way down, and I mean they were coming decreasing dramatically before the introduction of vaccinations. And when vaccinations were introduced, not only did the slope of the curve not change on the graph, meaning it had no effect, but virtually all of the incidences of those diseases after the vaccinations were caused by the vaccinations. And so they do not work. They have lulled the public into a false sense of security. And the biggest thing they've done is lied to the doctors, and the doctors are deceived. And what better way for the pharmaceutical companies and the big money makers to make money than to deceive the doctors into thinking these things are good? Now, the number of vaccinations a child gets now by the time they go to school, the number of vaccines they get, is 33. And these all are damaging and dangerous, and sudden infant death syndrome, the main cause of that is vaccinations as well as autism. So if you want to really protect your child, don't have them vaccinated. Now you say, well, they won't let them into school. Well, in these books you can find out how you get waivers so your child can go to school. The schools will tell you, oh, it's very dangerous for all the other children if your child is not vaccinated. Well, that's not true, because if all the other children are vaccinated, and if vaccinations really work, then it won't matter what your child ever gets. The other people won't get it. But you see, they want to scare you. And secondly, they in their gut know that these things don't work, because many people get the very diseases that they're vaccinated against. So when you get a disease injected right into your body with a needle, the chances that you'll get that disease are really, really very high. And that's how a lot of people get the flu. All these people get flu shots, and then they get the flu.
And have you noticed that since this last year, when there just wasn't enough flu vaccine to go around, why we had much less problem with flu than we ever had before?
Of course.
But nobody ever wants to point those logical things out.
Well, that's right. Well, people are terrified. They're terrified of disease, and of course now we have all these supposedly emerging diseases. And as I've told you, I don't even believe that SARS is a disease, because you can't, with what they say are the symptoms of SARS, you can't distinguish that from virtually any other kind of respiratory problem or a cold or the flu or anything else. So these are meant to scare people, and they're meant for control. To be able to quarantine people at will, quarantine whole cities, destroy the economy of an area. They're meant for control. And they don't even have to have a disease. They're talking about all this bird flu and about how many people are dying from bird flu in China. Well, first of all, China is a huge country with billions of people. The number of people that are dying are very small in comparison to the deaths from all causes over there. And secondly, who do you know that's been over there that can verify these things? They could tell us anything in the press, right?
They certainly could. Our reality is created by the people who publish the newspapers. And
right.
Are they telling the truth? We just don't know. But I think we always have to challenge everything.
That's right. Most of the time they're not telling the truth, because they have ulterior motives.
Well, I wouldn't question that at all, but I do have a very uneasy feeling that they're focusing our attention on the threat of an influenza pandemic for a very specific reason. That we're going to know what that is, I think, in the relatively near future. And all I can say is maybe they're going to unleash a pandemic. We don't know, but they do not spend this much time publishing article after article after article, program after program on television and on radio, focusing our attention on the threat of the pandemic, unless they know something and they're going to use this for their purpose.
And the way you protect yourself is to build your immune system, because there are always people who survive every massive epidemic, even if it kills a lot of people. There are always people who survive, and the ones who survive have the good immune system. So start now rebuilding your immune system, because a healthy body doesn't get sick.
I think that's excellent, excellent advice. And, of course, you've actually had some cases of AIDS that have actually improved.
I know of 300 cases of AIDS who have turned around, some that were so bad that they were in the intensive care unit in the hospital with bad fungal diseases from their AIDS, and now they are totally well and even HIV negative.
Why are we hearing about that in the
media? Well, why aren't we hearing about cancer cures in the media? Because the pharmaceutical industry pays huge money for huge ads in the newspaper. You're seeing drug ads all the time on television. If they started talking about how you can get well without drugs, those drug companies would pull their ads, and then the newspapers would lose that revenue, the television stations would lose that revenue, and even the medical journals, where the pharmaceutical companies have huge ads, four-color ads, the medical journals would lose that advertising, and they would go broke. So it's all about money.
And, you know, it's really so interesting. I still go to medical meetings from time to time, and usually the speaker has been financed by one or another of the drug companies, and they always are telling you about this wonderful new treatment that just happens to be the latest medicine that was put out by the drug company that's paying them to be there. And the doctors sit there dutifully, and they listen, and they nod their heads without ever realizing they're being programmed by the drug company, who is not telling the truth about their studies at all. And they have employed doctors to come up with studies that will say that their product is better than somebody else's product.
Right.
And if you really read these studies, you realize that a lot of times it really doesn't make any difference, and sometimes these products really create a tremendous amount of harm.
That's right, and the studies are fraudulent. You know, I went to the American Orthopedic Association meeting just about 3 weeks ago. It was in Huntington Beach, and I'm a member of that organization. I have been for about 20 years, and I hadn't been to the meeting for about 15 years, and so I went because it was close. They had one whole session on osteoporosis, and all they talked about was how we need to send more people for bone density studies, and then we have to put them on Fosamax. Over and over again, it was drugs. And so I got up at the end of the session. They had microphones around, and I said, how come we're not hearing anything about nutrition? All the things I get from the Orthopedic Academy, none of them mention nutrition. They just talk about drugs. And, of course, some drug companies were co-sponsors of this meeting. And so I said, the biggest cause of osteoporosis is eating animal products, eating and drinking animal products,
hold
and
that,
nobody's
hold
talking
that,
about
hold
it.
Hold that thought.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here, the last segment of our program. So, anyway, I'm sure your remarks probably shocked a lot of those orthopedists, because nobody's, you know, they're good people. I love the orthopedists. It was part of that fraternity for so many years, but they're just not getting the truth.
Well, that's true. And, you know, the good news is that after the meeting, the doctor who is the liaison between the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgery and this organization that I was attending, he came up to me and he said, I was really interested in your comments. Could you send me some information? And the woman orthopedic surgeon who actually spoke, and we kept talking about Fosamax, I talked to her afterwards too, and she was interested, and so I sent her the information too. Again, I have abstracts from medical articles on osteoporosis in my workbook called Getting Started on Getting Well, showing that it was published in the medical literature as long ago as 1930. That's that's 75 years ago, medicine, organized medicine, has known that the main cause of osteoporosis is too much animal flesh and drink, milk, poultry, fish, dairy, and eggs in the diet. We've known that for 75 years, and yet you talk to the average doctor on the street and they don't have a clue, because the pharmaceutical companies give huge amounts of funding to the medical schools and essentially control what doctors are taught. So at least I had the opportunity to talk to the whole group through the question and answer session and to be able to send this information to some people who are in a position that may be able to do something about it.
Well, maybe we get them listening to our program. But let's go to Tom, who's calling from Colorado. Tom, do you have a question for Dr. Date?
I did have a few quick questions. One was tinnitus, ringing in the ears. I just had a...
Any thoughts at all about tinnitus at all, Lorraine?
Well, again, you know, those things are caused... First of all, you have to ask, what are you on, any medicines? Are you taking aspirin? Some medicines cause this ringing in the ears, and aspirin is well known to cause ringing in the ears.
Tom, are you on any sort of medicines?
No, I don't think I was.
All right.
What do you mean you were?
Well, when it started, you know, and it's been incessant since October.
Are you on medicine now?
No.
All right, fine. Are you dizzy at all?
No.
All right, you just have this constant ringing in the ears,
but,
right?
But first of all, you can't look at just what do I take to get rid of the ringing in my ears. Again, you have to start getting on the whole plan. You have to eliminate all of these animal products from your diet. You have to stop using fluoride. You have to stop drinking water with fluoride in it. You have to start drinking large amounts of water every day, because many of these things are, they have many factors that are leading into them, and you have to do the whole thing.
Tom, I suggest that you go to a Lorraine's website. That's drday.com. That's drday.com. Hey, we're going to have to let you go because you're out of time. I should have called earlier, but thanks so much. And Lorraine, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thanks.
Always
so
a pleasure.
Much. Thanks a lot, Stan. Bye-bye.
Good night. God bless. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I always enjoy having Lorraine on. I always used to say that in the AIDS epidemic that, you know, if she was on the other side, we wouldn't stand a chance. And she certainly did a wonderful job of educating people across America. We had the opportunity of being on many television programs with her, and at least there are some Americans who realize that we never tried to stop the AIDS epidemic. It's killed over 20 million people, another 40 million infected. It will eventually depopulate large parts of Africa. And faced with an epidemic of this magnitude, what are we doing? Why, we're continuing the same failed public health policy. And that, of course, takes us into the whole issue of population control. If you haven't seen our 4-tape set on population control, if you haven't seen our video on population control or read my population control agenda monograph, you really need to get it. And you need to understand what's going on. And, of course, we have 4-tape sets on the AIDS epidemic. We have 4-tape sets on so many important issues. And, of course, you'd like to get more information. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And, of course, if you'd like to, go to my website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And then, of course, let me suggest my book, AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic. I don't think there's anything that really quite covers what's going on as well as that book, because it gives you tremendous insight into the forces that were at work that were limiting our ability to do what was logical, to stop this terrible epidemic. Again, my book, AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, and then to understand where the virus came from, because this is an entirely new virus. It never was here before. Just as Lyme disease is a new disease, chronic fatigue syndrome is a new disease, Ebola and Marburg disease are new diseases. Why, let me suggest a book. It's called Emerging Viruses, AIDS and Ebola, by Dr. Horwitz, and it will give you tremendous insight into the forces that are at work in our society that are totally evil. The first type of this disease was known as Marburg's disease, and of course it's very, very similar to Ebola, but the first cases of Marburg occurred in a place called Marburg, Germany, I believe in 1967, and they occurred in laboratory monkeys. Now, why would this disease occur only in laboratory monkeys? And, of course, it spread from the laboratory monkeys into the people there. The laboratory monkeys have been imported into Marburg, Germany, and several other towns, which also, of course, had the disease, their animal laboratories. But there, it was imported so that they could kill the monkeys and then take their kidneys and grow polio vaccine for all of Africa in the cultures of the kidneys of these monkeys. Had the monkeys not died during the quarantine period, why we would have killed all of Africa with that vaccine? Well, fortunately, they did die. And a number of the people then who worked with the animals died. And the doctors who took care of the patients in the hospital died. And eventually, of course, they were able to quarantine and bring the disease under control. But why did the disease first occur in laboratory animals? And I think that answer may be self-explanatory. Because there are people who've been working to create new diseases. Over 80 scientists who've been working on this field have died mysteriously in the last few years. If you haven't heard my interview with Steve Quayle on that subject, why, it's available through Radio Liberty. And then, of course, go to our website, radioliberty.com. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Pray for America and pray for Radio Liberty. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.